In the early days of film, eager viewers flocked to theaters for a communal escape into stories portrayed on celluloid and projected onto the big screen for a larger-than-life experience. Today, audiences have access to thousands of stories right at their fingertips, streaming to screens that fit in the palms of their hands. But how do advances in technology that change how we consume media and democratize the artistic process affect the production of creative content? In episode 2 of season 3, Breaking In, writer, producer, and actor Ariel Brackfeld leads the discussion in this recording of last October's invite-only filmmaker panel, hosted by the Grand Junction Film Festival and recorded on location by Crossing the Divide. We give you exclusive access to film industry insiders, sharing stories of their personal journeys to success in the rapidly evolving world of television and cinema. They'll divulge several tricks of the trade, along with predictions about the impact of emerging technology on the viewer experience and what creators can do to stay on top of the game. Welcome to Season 3 of the official podcast of Crossing the Divide, a multimedia exploration of life in the Intermountain West. Crossing the Divide counters a media culture fixated on urbanism and elevates a region defined by open space, sweeping vistas, big skies, and natural wonder. I'm Gretchen Reist, guiding you over the divide and into the diverse terrain of the American West.
My name is Neil Mant. I live in Los Angeles. I'm originally from Detroit. And I started in television when I was a teenager, about maybe 15, and started producing stuff on my own, and then worked in news, and then moved to LA and started directing movies, and then started creating TV shows. And here I am now.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jenny Castor, and I'm currently the executive producer of arts for Rocky Mountain PBS. But I kind of had a woohoo, right? I think I had a fun journey to kind of getting to that location. I'm from the East Coast, went to school in New York City and studied communications and knew I wanted to do either film or television. And as a bunch of internships guided me in a different direction, I went down the news path. And so I've been a news photojournalist for probably the better part of 20-some years. And then I segued into that glorious position called backpack journalist or solo MMJ producer for multimedia journalism, where I was the videographer for my own stories, the reporter, editor, writer, web writer, and rinse and repeat for the next day. But what that taught me was how to find stories, identify characters, and do them quickly. But now I've taken those skills and I kind of do a little more artistic storytelling, where I'm still the videographer, editor, producer for a half-hour weekly arts and cultural program. So using certainly a lot of the film storytelling techniques, but with a little television spin on them. Thanks.
And I'm Marielle Rodriguez McGill. I am also from the East Coast, and I moved out here a little bit over a decade ago. I started out at Rocky Mountain PBS, where that's how I know Jenny and Alex and a number of the people here who are with Rocky Mountain PBS, but worked there first as an intern, worked on a food-themed web series, worked my way up to producer-director, and I worked on their historical documentary series, which is very, you know, Ken Burns-y. It's called Colorado Experience, so similar to American Experience, if you all watch PBS. And then now I'm currently the deputy film commissioner for Colorado, so I work in the state film office. The technical name is the Colorado Office of Film, Television, and Media. Quite a mouthful. But our job as the film office here is to represent Colorado, to show off how beautiful our state is as a great place for locations to filmmakers both in and out of state, to show off our great crew here in Colorado. And we also have a number of educational outreach opportunities that we do as well, which I can get into a little bit later. But yeah, thank you for having us here.
So let's talk a little bit about how you guys got your starts. Because you're looking at a room full of young professionals, right? Just on the verge of their career. So let's talk a little bit about how you got your start and whether you always want to pursue film or the entertainment industry and what aspect you initially want to pursue. Neil, let's start with you again.
Okay. We were talking earlier. First of all, there's no age requirement in anything these days. I mean, if you're 11 years old, you could be a gymnast on the world stage. If you're 13, you could be a professional tennis player and play at Wimbledon. You could be a professional actor at 3. You know, there's no reason why you couldn't win an Oscar tomorrow and beat out Quentin Tarantino if you had the skills. So, you know, some people sort of have them built in. It's very rare. They still need to be fine-tuned. Some people need a lot of finesse, and then it starts to come together, and they understand it, you know, and it's just time and practice. But ultimately, it's really about team building. And so I started about 15 in public access. How many people here know what public access is? Okay, pretty good. It's a local cable. Way back in the day, you know, equipment was very expensive. I didn't have anything. At 15, I didn't have everything at school I could use. But they have to leave a channel available for the public's use here, and you can use the equipment for free. Some people don't know about that. And you can make any show you want. And so I started doing a show where I would interview rock stars that came through Detroit. And it was 1985. Nobody was born here. And I would call record companies, and I would say, hey, I have a television show in Detroit, which at the time was maybe the fifth or sixth biggest market in the country. So it was a serious city. And, you know, every big artist came through. Detroit was one of those rock and roll towns that always did well for bands that sort of limped across the country, and then they sold out in Detroit. And so I started interviewing these people in the record companies. They didn't know how old I was. They couldn't see me. It was just on a phone. I sounded professional. And then they would issue me a backstage pass, and I would go back there, and I would interview Sting, Rod Stewart, you know, people like that. And did you ever see the movie Almost Famous? Oh, my goodness, you guys got to watch this movie. It's good. Anyway, that was me in the film, basically. So I was going on tour at times with rock artists and, you know, skipping school. It was pretty crazy. That won me a National College Emmy when I was in college. And then I started reporting for the NBC affiliate in Detroit. And I moved to L.A. And I didn't know anybody, didn't have a college degree, didn't have any money. But I had the drive. And so you at some point need to just determine, is this what you want to do? Or are you exploring things? I mean, part of college is you go and you explore things, and you say, hey, is this right for me? Isn't this right for me? So at some point, you'll decide that. For me, I decided it very young, maybe 9 or 10, and I started focusing on that for a long time.
What aspect did you initially want to pursue? You mentioned journalism.
Well, I actually started acting. So I started before 15. I started at 10.
Mm-hmm.
They were making a film by my house, and I went up to the producer. I went up down there, and I was like, who's in charge? And they're all like, who's this person? And so they're like, well, that guy is the producer. And I went over to him, and I said, how do I get into show business? And he sort of was caught off guard, this 10-year-old asking him that. So he then waves over the casting director, and he says, this guy wants to be in show business. And then within a few weeks, I meet an agent, and I start doing commercials, which on its own was pretty exciting and remarkable. And again, Detroit was a big city, so they had a lot of advertising businesses that were there because of the car industry, so they have big headquarters there. So I got some work, I got in the unions, and then about a year later, we were in New York City, so I was 11. My family's originally from there, my uncles, aunts, grandparents, and so we were there for Thanksgiving, and I was saying to my mother, hey, let's try and get an agent in New York. And she was, of course, like, you're crazy, that's not going to happen. You're lucky to be working in Detroit. Very encouraging. And I bugged her enough. She said, all right, well, let's go around to some talent agents. And I didn't realize that going around to talent agents at 4:30 the day before Thanksgiving was bullshit. Everybody was closed. They were all gone except one guy. And he said, yeah, come on in. And he's like, read the script. I read the script. He's like, oh, very good. Looked at the resume. It was very good. He said, well, there's an audition for a bubblegum commercial. So I went out that afternoon, I auditioned, and I got it. And then I did it a couple of days later, and everybody in it was on Broadway, including one girl who was Annie. And then about 3 weeks later, I got a call from him when I was back in Detroit. Hey, got another audition. I think it's right for you. And so it was only like an hour and a half flight, probably, you know, from here like to Salt Lake or something like that. And it was cheap. It was like they had like a Southwest. It was like $50. So I went into New York with my mom, did the audition, got it, booked it. Another month goes by, phone rings. He's like, I got another thing. I go back. I don't get it. This goes on a couple of times. And finally, I get another call. And my mom's like, I can't do this. I have three other kids. It's too inconvenient. Just don't talk to anybody. And she took me to the airport, and I flew to New York at 11 alone. Go into the city, do my audition, fly back, or go stay at my aunt's house. And I did that twice a month for about a year and a half. So that was where
the rest is history.
Really started. And then it was just constantly always entrepreneurial. Again, when you decide if you want to be in this business, and everybody here will tell you this, you're deciding to be an artist. That's where you start. I'm telling a story. I'm a writer. I'm an editor. I'm a director. I like journalism. You didn't get in this to get rich, did you? No. There are other jobs you can do if money is what you want. You have to assume you're not going to make a lot of money, especially nowadays as things get cheaper. And you're valuable if you're good because you're inexpensive. But you have to constantly be entrepreneurial because you will age out at some point. Whether that's 32 or 42 or 52, you will age out unless somehow you get into a senior management position. But they're going to continuously want to have young people who not only are cheap, but are more in tune with young people because that's who they care about. Like, I'm what's called the demo that they care about. I'm out of the demo. So nobody cares about me in television or in advertising. They don't market to me at all. You guys are right in the demo. So they're going for you, and they want to know what you think. So after moving to L.A., I used my journalism, and I got a gig with ABC News. I produced the O.J. Simpson criminal trial and the Oklahoma City bombing. And then I said, you know, the reason I came to L.A. was to make movies. So I just quit journalism, maxed my credit cards, made a film. Fortunately, I sold it, you know. But again, I put together the right team. I had the right actors. And that's really what it's about, is team building. And then I started doing more films and then television. It's just always, what else can I do? Who inspires me? How can I work with that person? You know, no matter how great you are at one thing or two things, you're not great at 10 things. Nobody is. So it's all about using the people around you to work with. Or nowadays, people work remotely. So you can find people, you know, in Ukraine or Argentina who can help you on your project, whether it's editing, making graphics, animations, whatever you need, you can find it.
And I think, you know, Jenny and Marielle will also be able to speak to that in terms of the Colorado community, too. Jenny, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how did you start? Did you always want to pursue this?
Yes. I think I was a sophomore at Fordham University, and I knew right then and
my
there.
My brother went to Fordham.
Woo-hoo, go Rams, right?
My grandfather
in the
taught
Bronx.
At Fordham.
Woo-hoo, all right. I knew right away I wanted to be a photojournalist, and so, yes, next to we're similar in generations here. So next to my Def Leppard posters and assorted other Dirty Dancing posters, I also had a poster of a Betacam, a Sony giant big camera, that I knew I wanted to do that. And when graduation came around, a lot of my roommates were going on to grad school, and I said, no, I'm chomping at the bit. Let me go get my first job, because I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I had done a variety of internships in my hometown of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, at the ABC affiliate, and so I knew that that's where I wanted to work, but there wasn't a job right away. So I did a couple months at a radio station where I was the Phillies board op for the affiliate in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And then, as luck would have it, an opening presented itself. And I'm glad you're all sitting down, because my first salary in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania in 1993 was $11,500.
Woo.
And that was a full-time person. Woo! Right? But I think in my story, you're going to hear the word luck, but also seizing an opportunity quite a bit. So I started off as their chief editor for video, for the newscast, for the 5, the 6, the 10, no, the 11 o'clock on the East Coast. And so I was grinding out edit content, bam, 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 bam. But I wanted to be that photojournalist. And this is where the luck comes in, a little piece of ice. And my friend Ed Fox, still in Pennsylvania, slipped on that and broke both of his ankles. He couldn't be a photographer anymore, for at least 6 months, so guess who got the opportunity? And I said, immediately, let me jump in and learn. And so the rest is kind of history. I made a ton of mistakes. Absolutely. I shot purple video. I framed things wrong. This was back when the viewfinder was black and white. So you really had to white balance and understand the physics of light and color and what that number was seeing. So yeah, you do that once. You shoot purple snow once. But I knew then I only want to stay in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for a few more years. I wanted to go west. And so I set my sight on Denver or Minneapolis.
Why Denver?
At the time, and still now, Denver is very well known for their video journalism. Some of the best video journalists work at the affiliated stations at Channel 9, at KUSA, and all of the Denver stations. And so here I was, this really young, green, new videographer, but with that spark. And I got a job at Channel 9, so I just packed up and moved. And so then I would say opportunity, anytime opportunity comes your way, just be willing to give it a chance. I did jump ship, which I never thought I would do, and I went to the competing station, and I ended up being there for 14 years, and they offered me great opportunities. I did everything. I then became that solo reporter. I didn't want to be on camera, but that's what the news director suggested I do, and I said, well, I guess I better try that. And you know what? Again, opened a ton of doors. And now I'm working on a half-hour program, and I'm getting to meet amazing artists and musicians from across Colorado and beyond. And we're growing our content, and I'm helping to mentor and lead interns. You will hear me use that word a lot, interns. I love interns. I love sharing my passion. And when students come and work with us and they want to learn the same things. Wow. So that's how, and we'll get to this later, but that's how I find contractors. That's how I find people that I want to work with when I have an opening. So anyway, that's my story a little bit. And I still love to shoot stories, video editing, and all kinds of great stuff. And I'm always trying to learn the new technology. What's this new thing I just heard about the other day? TikTok? All right, I got to learn that. I didn't know about that, right? But you can teach this old dog some new tricks, because I don't want to age out yet. I'm ready to stay on top of this right now as best I can, right? But I need your help.
Maria, let's hear how you got your start and whether this was something you always wanted to pursue.
Sure. So growing up, I would always play with my dad's video camera. He had one of those big Magnavox. You had to physically put a VHS tape into it.
It wasn't on the cloud?
It wasn't on the cloud. It wasn't even digital. Analog. It was really fun. So I would play around with that, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And I didn't really, when I went to college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I started college. You guys are ahead of the game that you're already taking classes in film and television and editing. So it wasn't until my senior year of college that I had an internship at the local ABC affiliate as well. And I just fell in love with storytelling. I worked that fall on a magazine show, and so my big project was to produce a 30-minute show on culture through dance, and because I had grown up as a dancer and loved telling those stories. And so once that show aired on television, I was hooked, and I was like, this is what I want to do. Why haven't I been studying this before? So I ended up moving to Denver after college and pursued a master's degree in documentary filmmaking there, and it was really, this great experience of learning how to use a camera for real, not just my dad's Magnavox running around, like filming whatever I thought was cool. I learned about lighting. I learned about gathering audio. And I learned about storytelling, which is one of the most important pieces of creating content, I think. And from there, I was working on my thesis film, which was on the food truck scene in Denver at the time, because believe it or not, the new hip food trucks were just emerging at that moment. And I was out filming, and this older gentleman came over to me and gave me his business card, and he said, "What are you doing? Tell me about your project." And after I shared information on the project. He said, great, call me on Monday. And I was like, this is so weird. Why is this guy giving me his card? And he walked away. I looked down, and it was the president and CEO of Rocky Mountain PBS. And so I was like, okay, maybe I should give him a call. Maybe I should reach out. So I ended up meeting with him and his director of programming, and I ended up with an internship at Rocky Mountain PBS, and from there I worked my way up. I interned, as I mentioned earlier, there for a while. Then I started out as a contractor, worked my way up to producer and director. And all through this time, I had incredible mentors who really, you know, would teach me what they were doing, and then put me on a really long leash. So I felt like I had a lot of the ability to edit and to film and to tell stories. And it was an amazing experience. And from there, I am now over with the film office, but I still have that love of storytelling. And one of the cool things about working in the film office is that I have a broader view of what the industry is like here in Colorado. I've also learned so much more about, you know, the things that aren't so fun, like film financing and all of that jazz. And then also still on this side, I've been working on documentary projects, because that's what I love to do, is share stories with different audiences.
Each of you guys talked about the importance that mentors and these opportunities had for you, you know? I mean, there's a saying that you don't get anywhere overnight. You need a hand, you know? You filmmakers, artists in general, help each other up. You reach back, you help the next person up. So, Marielle, I want to talk about how people can get involved in your field, in your company. How these guys here and the folks listening at home can get involved with you, with what you do.
Sure. Like with the film off?
Absolutely. Film office, as well as, like...
I probably wouldn't start with the film office as you start off your career. I would say, internships are really key. I think we've all mentioned them before. I think I had 4 or 5 internships through, you know, my college and grad school experience. Everything from – and the thing that I think is really interesting about internships is it's a great way to learn what you like and what you don't like. My first internship was a marketing internship, and we were creating print marketing for textbooks. And I definitely honed my InDesign skills and my Photoshop skills, but I realized that wasn't really what I wanted to do as a career. I also interned for a ski film company, which was really exciting. I probably wasn't the best candidate, because I didn't really know how to ski at the time, but in the summer when I had an internship, it was more about the editing process. And so I learned a lot about skiing, and I also learned a lot about editing. And that was incredible, just to have that ability to work in a professional environment, but also to see how a film company actually, how it works, what the different roles are. What does a producer do? What does an executive producer do? What does the editor do? What does the assistant editor do? And so it really opened my eyes to the different possibilities for a career in film. When I was interning at a news station, it gave me a glimpse into not only what a morning magazine show looks like, but I then continued my internship and saw what the midday newscast was like, and, you know, running from the newsroom to the studio to drop off scripts and things like that. It just gave me a closer view. It wasn't necessarily something that I could read about in a textbook. It gave me that real-world experience. So I would encourage you guys, when you're studying film, I feel like the workload of homework can be really challenging, because you're creating content all the time, and so it's different than some other classes where the homework might be different. You have to constantly find time in your schedule to collaborate with classmates, to work with your actors. If you have actors, you have to work with their schedules. But I would encourage you, whether it's over breaks or over the summer, to look for those internship opportunities, or to, you know, start out as a PA, a production assistant on set. I know Ariel is working on a lot of great content here. In the Grand Junction area, it's another way to be on set and really see, like, what does a grip do? What does a gaffer do? What's a best boy? It's a, you know, you can really have that hands-on, eye-opening experience.
And Jenny, let's talk a little bit how, you know, people can get involved with Rocky Mountain PBS or photojournalism or creating that type of content.
Absolutely. You know, again, internships and volunteer opportunities. Because, quite frankly, now that I hire contractors, and occasionally we've had some full-time positions as well, I'm looking for people I already know their work ethic, I know their skills, I know kind of does their personality mesh on the team, because it's truly a team that we're building. Yes, we create really cool videos, but you only do that if you have a solid team and you're really working well together. So I would say, I know for, I'm obviously based in Denver, but each semester we have usually 2 to 3 interns that come from, you know, obviously you have to live close by at that time, but in the summer we also have interns that they sometimes come from out of state if they have family living in Denver, so they're able to stay with us and really spend some hands-on time. That's the one thing I would say in our program that we've been trying to really hone in, is that our goal is that every intern or volunteer that comes through kind of goes through an entire workshop process. The goal being that they turn a 4 to 6 minute broadcast quality Arts District segment by the time they leave. So they have learned everything from, you know, how do you white balance this Canon C200? How do you light the interview? How do you transcribe the interview? How do you write the script or make notations if it's a story that doesn't necessarily need a script? How do you edit it and deliver it? How do you make a social media promo? So the idea is we're trying to give students real life experience, because I tell you, that's the hardest thing. I'll have folks apply for positions, but they don't have any experience. They have this wonderful master's degree, but I don't know if you can do the job, right? I'm more likely to hire somebody that I have either worked with, or they have worked with somebody else that I have worked with. And you're going to find that this industry, we kind of know everyone. We're kind of like Kevin Bacon a little bit. So everyone's somewhat connected to somebody else. And, you know, how you conduct yourself at school then leads to your first job. Come on, show up on time. Show up on time. It's so simple. And just be excited. Be passionate. I mean, come on. We're doing great jobs. We get to meet cool people. The other day I had to stop for just a second and kind of pinch myself. I'm like, wait, I got to just really have people tell some really powerful personal stories for a story I'm doing for an Arts District segment, but I would have never met them otherwise. So I know that internships may not be the only option, because a lot of television stations and production companies may not offer as many now. It's a tricky thing, because if there's not funding for it, some companies won't allow interns to come in without being paid. Mm-hmm. I was lucky, I think, in the sense that when I did my internships, no, I didn't get paid, but it created more opportunities for me. So I think it's a little tricky for you guys, for everyone now, but I would just get your hands in there, get your experience in there. You know, sometimes get stories on your phone, post them to your blogs, post them to your social media sites so that people know what you're capable of doing.
And really quickly, to Jenny's point of always show up early or show up on time, there's a saying in the industry, if you're on time, you're already late. If you're early, then you're on time. So showing up early is really important.
Yeah.
Neil, I'd love to hear your perspective, especially with the various levels of the industry that you've worked in. You know, how would you recommend that people get involved in your field? How can these guys get involved either with your company or in your field?
Well, we all have a pretty varied background here. Mine is totally entrepreneurial. I've really never worked for anybody. I've never had a job, never been an employee. But first of all, everything they just said, I totally agree with. And like Jenny, I didn't get paid when I did my internships, which I did multiple of while I was working professionally as a teenager. I probably did about 5. Mm-hmm. Started in radio and then news and in commercials. One way to sort of combat, again, she's correct, internships often today, they want to have more structure to it. What is it for school? You know, they want to check papers, et cetera, et cetera. They want to pay you sometimes. They may only have a couple of slots. You know, another approach you could do is just go to people and say, I want to work for free. don't even use the word internship. Just, I'm here to work. I want to be here, whatever that is. And so that, oh, well, okay, we have the internship program here, but this guy just wants to work for free. Okay. Whatever it takes to get around, and again, I agree, you need to be early. You need to be first one in, last one out. The only people that really make it high in this industry are the people who really have that drive and work hard, and other people will see that. Now, it's a combination of a bunch of things. You got to be lucky. You got to be in the right place at the right time. You got to say yes when something comes in front of you. You have to work very hard, be a good team member, so that everyone remembers you and likes you, because there's going to be a moment where you're going to call somebody else and say, I want to work for you. It's not going to be a blind resume that goes into somebody and they say, wow, look at this great piece of paper. I'm going to hire this person. They're going to call somebody, for sure. And the more people you have that you can, they can call, the better. Now, you know, we talk about mentors. I mentored a number of people over my time. You know, as you get more seasoned in the business, it's sort of like a responsibility that when you see people that are in help, and if you feel like you can connect with them, you should. But I've sought out mentors. You know, when I've met people who I have not worked with, who are more senior than me, who in no way are going to help me, but they're good people to run ideas off of, I make those friendships. So I have maybe a dozen people that I know that are retired in their 60s and 70s who I go and see on a regular basis, and I just talk to them. I'm not asking anything, I just talk to them. So you want to meet those kinds of people and make a relationship with them and shake their hand and then just be able to email them the reasonable pace, you know, and just say, hey, I have an idea, I have a thought. Can I get your ideas? Can we talk? Now, a minute ago I said you're going to be paupers in this business. That's not everybody. You could be super successful. Anyone in this room tomorrow, you could make something that's amazing. You go viral on the internet. You could have a giant website. You could make a feature film that goes crazy. You come up with an idea that's a short. It turns into a series. Next thing, you've got the next Stranger Things. Anything can happen. But you should be reasonable. You're not in a financial world. This is not the world that just prints money. That's Washington. That's Wall Street. Those are the guys who have all the money. So again, you're driven by your passion for being in the industry. That needs to show to everybody around you. In my world, you need to be very entrepreneurial. You need to, you know, be thinking of 10 things at a time and maybe working on 10 things at a time. Not at this age, obviously, but more than one. So you're sort of always thinking ahead. All right, this plays out here where I go into production here and this is going to be a 2-week shoot. It's going to be a post. All right, once I'm in the post, I'm going to hand it off to the editor and I'm going to really work on developing this, which is going to go into production, and then this one's finishing, and this one's starting, and so you're going to want to always be doing that and looking for people to continuously collaborate, whether you're an editor, I want to get the next thing lined up, I'm a director, I want to get the thing, producer, cinematography, everything. So you just need to be continuously working very hard, and the person who's the hardest worker is going to get out of the free job to a paid job, and then the person who's hard worker and is good will start to move up from there.
So let's have a group discussion now. I'd love your guys' input from your perspective. How would you go about making a project in Colorado? So let's call it a feature film. And let's say that the budget you're aiming for is $250,000 and you want to utilize elements here in Colorado. How would you do it? How would you start doing this?
Well, I'd have to have a script that makes sense in Colorado to start with. And then I would call the film commission and I would start to talk to them and start understanding where it could be done. Once again, you can't do this on your own. You need to have experts who are in the community. If I'm coming in from LA, there's so many questions I have. So I'm going to really spend some time understanding that from experts. And then, again, the film commission will introduce me to other people because there's a lot of people I'll need to know here. I'll need people to think that I'm credible and really meaning to do what I say. That's another thing is when you say you're going to do something, do it. Do it. Make it happen somehow. Don't leave people in the lurch, ever. So, I would work closely with the people in the community to understand it, and then that would lead to building out a crew and trying to figure everything out. But I couldn't just come here and just start knocking on doors and make things happen. I would have to be a part of the community with help.
Yeah, I can pick up on that. So as Neil said, you know, starting with a script, I think one of the most important things is starting with a really strong script, because a strong script will create a great film. So I work with the film office. So we're talking about a $250,000 budget. So has anyone here heard of film incentives? A little bit? Okay. One of the things that a lot of producers look for when they're trying to determine where they would like to shoot the film, in addition to looking at the different aspects of the script, they also look to see where there's soft money or film incentives. So if you look at a script and it has mountains, you know, someone might think of Colorado, but they also might think of Canada. They also might think of parts of Montana. And then they'll look to see where they can really, you know, save on that bottom line, which is film incentives. So Colorado has a 20% film incentive, and I won't get into the nitty-gritty, but basically when you film in an area that has a film incentive, they either give you a tax credit or a cash refund for filming there. So that's definitely one thing to think about when you're working on a feature film, is where can I get that credit? Then, as Neil mentioned also, reaching out to the film office, we do have a number of resources as well. And some of these you can utilize now while you're working on student films. We have an online location guide. So a lot of times with a narrative film, you'll want to hire a location scout or a location manager to help figure out exactly where you're going to film, what kind of permits are necessary for that location, you know, who owns the property. If you say, oh, I'd like to film up on that mesa over there, is it private land? Is it Bureau of Land Management or public land? Who do I reach out to get permission to film there? You want to make sure you have insurance to film in that area. So these are all the things that aren't as exciting necessarily about, you know, going and starting production on that first day, but you have to lay all that groundwork to have a successful project. So our office does have an online location guide. So that's a great place to start if you're thinking, oh, I'd like to film a project at a school. Are there any like abandoned schools in this area where I can easily get in and don't have to compete with the school week where students are there all day, every day? We also have a crew guide online. So we do require that you have a couple of credits before you can submit your information onto our crew guide. But that's a great way to see who the filmmakers are in your area, or if you were planning on crewing a production, you'd want to hire a really great line producer who can then go ahead and hire all your below-the-line people. Obviously, your heads of departments you'll probably want to hire as well, but our online crew guide is a great place to start, just to think about who's out there and what kind of positions are out there. And then, you know, there are also a ton of different industry organizations here, and that's a great way to get to meet people. So I think everyone up here would agree that your network or the people that you meet in your community are key to being able to say, hey, come and work on this project with me. Or if they're working on a project and they know you and they know your talents, they'll say, hey, are you free this weekend? Do you want to go shoot a quick music video with me? Or do you want to go shoot this or that with me? So it is getting to know people, whether it's attending industry events, working on different sets, working as a PA, volunteering, or attending film festivals, meeting other filmmakers who are interested in the industry as well.
And Jenny, I think, too, if you can speak on just, you know, the perspective of television here, like how would you go about making a project for television here?
Well, okay, so I obviously work on a show called Arts District, and what we're trying to do is expand our coverage, and we're trying to get stories from all across Colorado to grow into a full half-hour show weekly. And right now we have a super tiny team, and so we're looking for student productions that meet our broadcast standards that are obviously just great storytelling, great audio, nice composition, great editing. But then we can become a platform where we're partnering with the universities across the state, and we want to showcase your work. So there's an opportunity. I don't pay for that often. It gets kind of tricky in some of those areas. But what I can do is that helps give you credit in the sense that you've had a segment air on Rocky Mountain PBS and get distributed to other PBS partners. So I would say that's a huge resume booster. We also, and I don't know if this is maybe the right time to kind of talk about this as well, at Rocky Mountain PBS, we have a program called our Independent Producer Submission
Committee.
Committee, thank you. We just call it IPSE for short. And where local producers, film producers, if you make content, let we select some of the best content then to become programming that we distribute on Rocky Mountain PBS. Not necessarily in my show, but would then be at airing at other times on Rocky Mountain PBS. That gives you more credibility. It gives you a way to showcase the sponsors who may have funded your program. And it gives you kind of that distribution model. So there are certainly ways to kind of get your name out there, to get your high-quality productions, to have eyeballs on it, to then get you more work.
I have a big question for you guys. Where is the industry going? Where is filmmaking going? What should these guys focus on? Is it shorts? Is it features? Is it new media? What should they make?
Social media.
Talk about it.
I mean, it's just where things are happening. The internet is now 80% video. It'll be 99% video over the next couple of years. More people communicate through social media. The audience that the brands want to hit are through social media. You have to understand that storytelling. Look, they're all different, you know, very different. And by the way, before I forget, what Jenny is saying to you guys is a remarkable opportunity that you could make content. You could ask her specifically what kind of stories you should tell. You know, she's not sending a crew out here, so you could be that person. And if you did it enough times, you could become a regular person, and then maybe she'd pay you money. But even separate of making a nickel, I agree, the credit is amazing, the distribution is amazing, and it's in television. You know, so while you could be a superstar in social media, if you want to sort of really be broad, you need to spend some time in the other mediums, which is television and film. And so to have somebody in this room who is like, I will consider your content, this is a no-brainer. So you should 100% make stuff and send it to her. She'll give you feedback, I'm sure, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would.
Yeah,
you bet. I mean,
this is a no-brainer. But digital media is where things are going. You know, I think a lot about immersive media, virtual reality and augmented reality. We're in a moment where the internet is about to change. Again, you guys weren't around. Dan was around. You know, he knows this. So in 1993 or 4, if I was talking with you guys about my new business, the internet and websites, it would have been very difficult for you to understand what that means, what that will become. There was really no internet that was of use at that time. And so if I had understood that, I would have had a major leg up on other people, major. If in 2006, a year before the App Store and the iPhone came out, if I understood the smartphone and I understood what the App Store was going to be, and by the way, it already existed. In Android, they had apps. They had a smartphone. Apple's never first. They're last, but they're the best. So, you know, I could have, in theory, understood this. And again, when the App Store happened, I would have been ready, and I could have done a lot of stuff. If I'd understood social media before Facebook, if I'd understood YouTube before YouTube, I mean, there are things that you could have predicted and you could have seen coming if you were in tune with that. So now as I look at things, I look at augmented reality a lot, not virtual reality. Virtual reality is very specific. It's got a ways to go, but augmented reality means you can look at anything in the world and you can pull content off of it. And as an example, we watch the Kardashian show. On E, there are commercials that are through the whole show that I don't watch it, but I imagine there's some consistent commercials. There's probably some sponsors that are there every week. You know, maybe it's Coke or some kind of makeup brand, but there's definitely a consistency. So that brand does not know if you saw the show. They have no idea. There's no way of saying, oh, if Frank saw that, now I can communicate with Frank. There's no one-on-one relationship. That is the goal of every single business on planet Earth, is to get your cell phone number and your email and your name and get you to check a box that says they can hit you back at any time. That's the goal. And so they can't do that on a television set. You can't purchase anything from the television set, or at least just from looking at them. I mean, you can scroll through, maybe make some buys, and there'll be more things in the future. But the point is the internet, the mobile phone, that's where we are all the time. That's where you guys are all the time. So augmented reality allows content to be pulled anywhere. So let's just say the Kardashians were sponsored by Voss. There'll be a point where cable will really collapse, and it'll just be all OTTs like Netflix and other streaming platforms, Apple.
What does OTT stand for?
Over the top. Over the top means it comes into your house without going through a cable. And so the cable will disappear. It's already going away. You guys probably don't have cable. You're not paying for it. That's called a cord cutter. That's affecting the underlying, maybe I should talk about this for a second to understand. The underlying economics of cable, the way cable works is you pay for it. And let's just say for fun, it's $50 a month. Well, that 50, I know, it's a crazy number. It's way higher than that. Let's just say it's $50. That $50, let's just say it's $10 goes to the local community. There's another $5 goes to taxes. Now you're at $15. There's some other fees that get in, so that's $20. And now you got roughly $30. Now the cable company, the national cable company is going to take some, and the local cable is going to take some. So now you got, let's say, $20 left. That $20 is split up amongst the major cable channels across the country, which are called, it's called a carriage fee. Now, if you're a tiny, tiny little cable channel, you know, maybe Smithsonian, you probably are not getting a cable or a carriage fee. But if you're e-network, you're maybe getting $1 from every person in the country. So you talk about it was 100 million people for a while. It's now dropped to probably 75 million. But 100 million people giving you $1, that's 100 million bucks a month. In a year, that's 1.2 billion. That's a lot of money that they're getting. Now, every day people leave cable, that money shrinks even more. So they went from 100 million to 75 million. That 75 will be 50 million, and it'll be down after that. And their economics are based on was not based on the people going away. It was based on growth. So, you know, 5-6 years ago when cord cutting started to happen, it started to have a major effect on the business. So as we see that more and more and more, people will move away from cable. Cable will start to fall apart. And by the way, on carriage fees, ESPN gets $7 a month. And that's because, not because grandma watches it, because grandma's nephew comes in and he's got to watch that game. And they spent their money on rights. So as an example of the college bowl games, they own, let's just say there's 52 games, they own 51 of those games. They spent serious money on it. They have played this out and bought these rights, whether it's NFL or college, several years in the future as the revenue is dropping. So they're going to get to a point where they're on a deficit. Now Disney's going to pay them out and it's not going to be an issue. But there's a problem happening in this industry. So as you think, everyone on the mobile phone, the Kardashians brand could be Voss. Well, cable will go away, and even if it doesn't go away soon, they'll be able to make additional content, like short-form content or special stuff, behind the scenes, whatever you want, and I'm going to have to go and buy this bottle to point my phone at it and collect the content into my phone, which I can then watch on my phone, I can watch on my tablet, I could beam the television set if I wanted. The point is, the brand now will know I looked at it. They will have my phone number because it registered me. And that is what they want. And so the way content moves, it's all just distribution. It's just the platforms are going to change. So you need to think, what are the platforms of distribution going to be in the future? Well, spatial computing is Internet 3.0. So now it's on a phone. It'll eventually go to glasses, maybe contacts. Audio is augmented reality. So there's different ways you can play with audio. So I would just be thinking, how is the Internet going to evolve? And spatial computing is one example for sure, but, you know, I'm always trying to figure out future distribution plans.
With that, too, I know PBS has a streaming service. I know, you know, the Office of Film looks at other things besides feature films. They look at streaming shows that come your way or new media shows that come your way. So, you know, is there any advice that you guys have kind of specific to streaming, to social media, to that type of content creation for these people to start doing right now?
Well, I can say at Rocky Mountain PBS, I've only been there a little over 3 years, and early on, even at that point, 3 years ago, we were kind of focusing on broadcast, and we were still looking at the ratings. Nowadays, I mean, I have to edit the show to broadcast specs, but I couldn't. The ratings are nearly zero because people have gone digital. So we then, you know, re-edit or export the files for all kinds of digital players, the PBS video player. We're still partially on YouTube, but this is like a hot conversation that's happening like this exact moment. We just launched the new season of Arts District 2 weeks ago, and we have a new director of digital marketing in our building, and there's this huge conversation happening right now. So for the segments that are airing tonight, how am I supposed to share them? Do I still put them on YouTube? Well, we can't monetize that at Rocky Mountain PBS. in the sense that we can't put any spots on there or not commercials, but any sort of sponsorship ads or anything of that nature. So we're giving our stuff to YouTube and Facebook. And so we're trying to find ways to better position ourselves on our Rocky Mountain PBS player. But how do we get you folks to know that's where the content really is? And that's where we need your eyeballs to be to then count you, and to make sure that, you know, we're hitting the audiences that we're looking for. So I wish we had some of those answers right now. We're struggling every week. What's the best way to create a social promo for our story? One week we air the whole story on Facebook because it's really cool. The next week we just put a 20-second spot. So if you guys can figure that out, why don't you let me know about that too? Like, what's the best way to do this? So it's evolving now. And notice what I'm not saying is I've not even moved into that next realm. What is the next? I'm still playing catch up. And that's where, you know, we're trying to take Rocky Mountain PBS to a different level as well. And how do we start moving into the future before you guys do?
Yeah, and from the film office perspective, you know, when we look at the incentives program, we incentivize narrative films, documentaries, but also video games. There's video game content that's created here in Colorado. And also last year we incentivized a project by there's a company in Colorado called High Noon Entertainment. They do a lot of reality style shows like Fixer Upper, Cake Boss, that kind of stuff. They applied for an incentive for a project that was being distributed through Facebook. It was Von Miller's Studio 54. So it was created specifically for Facebook, was distributed for Facebook, only viewed on Facebook. And if you think about that, that's amazing to have content that, you know, what was traditionally a social media platform to keep in touch with old friends from school, now let's use it as a distribution method. It's definitely something to think about. We've partnered with a local production company on a series of PSAs on teen mental health and suicide prevention. And when these were created, the distribution method was thought of upfront because you don't really see I know when I'm watching television, I'm one of those cable cutters, and so I don't really see commercials when I'm watching television. I definitely don't see PSAs, but the thought process behind this campaign that's launching next week is that the way that it was shot, they're able to not only create the traditional 16:9 for television, but they're also able to crop the PSAs so they can be distributed through social media, be shared with social media influencers, be distributed through text message to schools. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you're creating content is that there are all these different distribution models. There are all these different audiences, and you really need to think about your audience and where you would like your content to go when you're creating that content.
I want to end with just a piece of advice before we get to our Q&A. So if you had one piece of advice to share, what would it be?
Work hard.
Go ahead.
No, work harder than anyone around you. That's it.
I echo that, and it's so funny. I heard you say this earlier, if you say something or do it. And I actually have something printed out on the little corkboard in my office that says, say it, mean it, do it. So that's certainly number one. But I have one other little side thing that popped into my mind just 2 days ago. As a gentleman who I've worked with for nearly 20 years and does some contract work for me, was working on a project in California, and he did not protect his gear, and it was all stolen. This has been one of my, I used to call it a newsmare, a nightmare, that I'd be running the live truck, and it would be a snowstorm, and I'd have the camera plugged into the live truck, but somebody would cut the cable and take my camera, because back in the day, they were like $30,000, right? You see, I walked in with my laptop. Even though it's the oldest laptop on the planet, I can't afford to lose it right now. And the same thing with the camera. I schlep that thing with me unless I know it's really locked up. So I'm just telling you, lock up your gear.
I would say practice, practice, practice. Look around. You have your whole crew right here in this room. Take those opportunities to work with your classmates and your peers and go out on the weekends. You know, make a fun short video. The more you practice, the better you are at your craft, and the more set up you will be to continue this career in the future.
I want to add, too, just make stuff. You guys have cameras in your pocket. Make stuff. If you have access to better gear, excellent. But teamwork, working your butt off, and knowing kind of what you want to make, it will get you into a better position. The more you practice, the better you'll be.
That ends another edition of Crossing the Divide. Thanks for tuning in. Access our full lineup of conversations with a diverse array of Western voices by searching Crossing the Divide on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and Spotify. And follow Crossing the Divide on Facebook and Instagram to keep up on podcast releases and access supplemental video and photography. Support for Crossing the Divide's official podcast comes from Rocky Mountain PBS, Mesa County Libraries, and the Daily Sentinel. Crossing the Divide, a voice for the Intermountain West.